8. The spectrum of consciousness. In the emerging science of consciousness and the investigation of the mind and its various modalities, Buddhism and cognitive science take different approaches. Cognitive science addresses this study primarily on the basis of neurobiological structures and the biochemical functions of the brain, while Buddhist investigation of consciousness operates primarily from what could be called a first-person perspective. A dialogue between the two could open up a new way of investigating consciousness. The core approach of Buddhist psychology involves a combination of meditative contemplation, which can be described as a phenomenological inquiry, empirical observation of motivation, as manifested through emotions, thought patterns, and behavior, and critical philosophical analysis. The principal aim of Buddhist psychology is not to catalog the mind's makeup, or even to describe how the mind functions. Rather, its fundamental concern is to overcome suffering, especially psychological and emotional afflictions, and to clear those afflictions. In classical Buddhist sources, there are three separate disciplines for the study of consciousness. The Abhidharma focuses on examination of the causal processes of the hundreds of mental and emotional states, our subjective experience of these states, and their effects on our thoughts and behavior. It is related to what could be called psychology, including cognitive therapy, and phenomenology. Second, Buddhist epistemology analyzes the nature and characteristics of perception, knowledge, and the relation between language and thought in order to develop a conceptual framework for understanding the various aspects of consciousness, thoughts, emotions, and so on. Finally, Vajrayana uses visualization, thoughts, emotions, and various physical techniques such as yogic exercises in an intense meditative effort to accentuate wholesome ways of being and to transmute the afflictions of the mind. It is concerned not with discovering an independent, permanent entity called the mind, but rather with understanding the nature of the ordinary mind and effecting its transformation into a non-afflicted, clearer state. The Buddhist approach to the study of consciousness is based on the understanding of functions and the modalities of the mind and their causal dynamics. And this is precisely an area where Buddhist understanding can most readily intersect with a scientific approach because, like that of science, much of the Buddhist investigation of consciousness is empirically based. I began to learn about the various aspects of the mind as part of my introduction to what is called Lo-Rig, which literally means awareness and intelligence. This topic is taught to trainee monks, normally at the age of 9 or 10, after the novitiate ordination at the age of 8. First, my tutors, primarily Ling Rinpoche at this time, made me memorize a working definition of the nature of mental events and the main categories of cognitive and emotional states. Although I did not have a clear idea of what it meant at this point, I knew that the standard Buddhist definition of the mental, as opposed to the physical, is characterized by subjectivity. Material objects characteristically have a spatial dimension and can be seen to obstruct other material objects. Mental phenomena, by contrast, must be viewed in terms of their temporal sequence and their experiential nature. I spent a great deal of time studying the distinctions between sensory experience and mental experience. A defining mark of sensory experience is its contingence upon a specific sense organ, the eye, the ear, and so forth. There is a clear recognition that each sense perception is distinct from the others and has an exclusive domain, so that the eye cannot access sound, or the ear taste, and so on. As was noted by the early Buddhist thinkers, including Vasubandhu and Dharmakirti, there are significant differences in the spatio-temporal processes involved in apprehending the objects of the various sensory spheres. Visual perception of an object can take place from a great distance, hearing a sound from a lesser distance, while the experience of a particular smell occurs within a still shorter range. In contrast, the remaining two senses, giving rise to gustatory and tactile experience, need direct contact between the senses and their respective objects. In scientific language, I would guess these differences will be explained in terms of the ways physical entities such as photons and sound waves emitted from objects stimulate the sense organs.